Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Now, go.
Are we on?
We are on now.
Oh, we are.
Everything's rolling.
We're live and we're all in the same room. And JB's just nipped upstairs and put some socks on for the benefit of people watching on Facebook Live.
Yeah, because otherwise every other message is about my feet. Yeah. Curves.
Sorry.
All of you.
Hobbit feet.
Yeah.
Right. Should we get on with this one? So this podcast is the international podcast off the back of the Six Nations round three. Lots of talking points. Three interesting games to get into. Varying degrees of quality, but plenty to talk about. And then we'll be doing a midweek domestic podcast covering all things Avicii Premiership, Pro 12, narcotics in France, and all kinds of other stuff that happens as well. So, shall we, gents?
Let's do it.
Hands in and pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Thank you very much for listening to this, the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're just three mates that love the game, and 52 weeks of the year, we are here for you talking rugby. And today, the Six Nations. You can find us, let me remind you, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. You can subscribe on iTunes, listen on Acast. We're on the Acast app as well. They're great too. Matthew W. Henderson left a 5-star review on iTunes, and amongst the comments, I'm just going to do this very briefly. Amongst the comments, he just said, "As funny as 2.5 Englishmen can be." JB, how do you feel at being described as half English?
Fine.
Now, how Welsh are you?
I'm North Wales. Oh, look at that! How's that happened?
That's okay.
It's all right, unbelievable.
Mate. It's all right. See.
There we go.
There's going to be plenty of that on the podcast today, don't you worry. We're also on Instagram. Do you know what? Instagram is the future, and do you know why? We've been working really hard for years to build up Twitter. 1 week, 600 people straight away. Bosh, Instagram.
I'm not on Instagram. I don't know what you're putting on there.
Pictures of you with doing a hover hand with Kieran Reid.
Oh, lovely.
Instagram will be good. The hover hand.
You must have taken that picture, Phil.
I did.
Yep, I did.
So did you actually touch Kieran Reid, or did you just keep your hand?
It felt like he did.
Hovering by his shoulder. Have a look at the picture if you want to see.
He touched my heart.
So we are Egg Chasers Podcast on Instagram. Go and get involved there and keep up to speed with what's going on. Right. So, Six Nations, round three. And really exhilarating, interesting, fascinating, infuriating at times weekend. Where do you want to start? Now, we said last week, we probably won't talk about England-Italy at all, because there won't be any talking points in that.
Wow.
There was a talking point. Do you want to start with that? Or...
Well, yeah, I would, actually. A brilliant game. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
I expected you would love it.
It's incredible. It is like... someone described it as rugby tactic porn, which is... I mean, it kind of did for rugby tactics what Nigella Lawson did to sugar-based recipes. It was incredible.
Right, well, I'll tell you what. Let's talk about anything we want to put in terms of the game besides Italy's interesting tactics and England's response to it.
Well,
so
I don't know. You can do that, Tim.
I kind of think that... Well, because for me, that's the only thing I really want to talk about. But so I was just like...
Oh,
open
I'm
forum.
With you. Right. Okay.
Is there anything else that...
Yeah, Elliot Daly's really good.
Yeah.
Daly is really, really good. Like, it's almost a travesty. He's had so little international time. Like, and his speed as well. I know everyone talks about his speed. But defensively, you can see this break on. And anyone else probably isn't going to catch the... is it the Italian winger? making the break. He's just good at everything. It's amazing that he's only got 5 caps.
And some of his kicks as well, some of his kicking out of hand was superb.
And this isn't kind of new. I mean, England have seen him play. In fact, England has seen him play against England for the Barbarians a while ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's comfortably the best player on the field. So yeah, Elliot Daly's good, but we all knew that.
Yes, yeah, we all knew that. Philip, oh, sorry, I'll need that later on. Philip?
Just, I guess, from an England fan's perspective, a bit of frustration. Because the tactic we'll come on to... but England weren't great besides that. Their scrum was up and down. Their line-outs weren't great. They, towards the end, or certainly in the second half, they got a few things together when Italy weakened and tired. But, it just wasn't a particularly good performance, even when the tactic wasn't being used and when that was taken out of the equation.
I think they were so rattled by the tactic that everything else just disintegrated.
All right, yes. So let's deal with this then. So again, I should have mentioned we are putting this on Facebook Live. You may be watching live now, in which case, hello and welcome, and leave your comments and questions and thoughts and whatever you want to say about JB's feet.
Yep, right.
Leave that there, and if not, you can go back and have a look at the Rugby Dungeon. Look at us sitting around and look at how buff Phil is. And you look like you're in a. The Grease film back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? right.
I'll take it as a compliment.
Yeah, I do. So let's talk about this tactics then. So you said England were rattled. I would completely agree with that.
Yeah.
And I found that quite frustrating that England was so rattled.
I'm not surprised they were rattled, though, because it's an unusual tactic. I mean, the only time I've seen it was something that has been mentioned on Twitter was the Chiefs game a couple of years ago under Dave Rennie when they were doing it. But it's a difficult thing. It's a difficult thing to get your head around because basically you expect certain conditions when you think there is a ruck and you expect to be able to get a nice clean pass to runners coming through, and that is just completely taken away. So you have to rethink your tactic from most restarts of the ball.
Yeah, well, I also think the double standard here is incredible, isn't it? Dave Rennie does it, and people go, bravo, Dave Rennie. Look at these guys studying the law book. These New Zealanders, they really do expand the game. It evolves. Italy do it. Matt Dawson's tweet today was pretty low, actually.
No, I don't think it was low. I think he's entitled, and I want people to have opinions. So I might not agree with his opinion, but I don't think we should call people who have an opinion low.
No, it was low and it was snide.
Otherwise, we're opening ourselves up for people to say you're low and snide.
Yeah, no, it was low and snide because you wouldn't say that to Dave Rennie. I guarantee you, he wouldn't say that to Dave Rennie.
After
the Chiefs are busy winning the Super Rugby.
After the Waikato Chiefs employed it as a tactic, was there not a meeting by World Rugby?
There was, yes.
So it was obviously. Enough of a thing. It wasn't just all round of applause. It was enough for a load of people to get in a room and go, okay, how does this affect the game and what could this lead to and how should we deal with this going forward?
Do you know, there's two times that I can think of comparable events happening. The first was George Smith when he first started stealing balls. No one had ever done that. No one had ever jackled over a ruck, picked up a ball and ran off. So you'd have the scavengers like Budge Pountney and... Neil Back. No one was doing what George Smith did. And everyone thought, oh God, it's the end of the game. And out of nowhere, George Smith had like 5 turnovers in one game. And that turned out to be fine. And the other one, which didn't turn out to be fine actually, was France versus Argentina, the opening game of the French World Cup, where Argentina did nothing but boot the ball.
The also, highest.
Yes.
Also Irish choke tackle.
Yeah, that's also a pretty good one.
And a Jonah Lomu-sized winger.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose what it does... is it just creates chaos. And then it's about which team is better at solving the problem. It's really clever.
I thought it did. It was interesting. It was interesting to see how much confusion it caused in that first half. Mm. And no one from England seemed to properly understand it. And no one, like Hartley, didn't give any leadership or direction to what they should do. But it was interesting to see how Jones handled it at half-time. And when they came out in the second half and they were... actively trying not to form rooks. They were offloading, which is exactly right because if people are not committing to the tackle, so they're the minimum commitment to the tackle, then offloading is going to be easier.
Exactly.
And the next men are actually backing away rather than piling in.
Yeah.
So it just means you win more yards.
Breach the gain line, game over. Now, I know JB and I are going to disagree on this. I'll be interested. I imagine Phil will be somewhere in the middle. but I, 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 from our rugby podcast account, it wasn't actually, I think JB assumed it was having a massive go at James Haskell. It wasn't.
I thought it was.
It wasn't. But James Haskell asking the referee what the laws were was, in my opinion, an absolute farce.
No,
I found it astonishing.
No, no. And I'll tell you why it isn't. Do you know when you played for Newbury?
Yep.
You had a system, defensive system, where you shot out the line to tackle a player.
We had one man who did, yeah.
Yeah. Prior to that game, did you go and clarify that law with the ref? And you told that ref what you're going to do?
Yeah.
Exactly the same thing happened today, which was, prior to the game, Brendan Venter or Conor O'Shea or both of them went to the ref and clarified the law. All that James Haskell was doing was clarifying the law. This tactic has been used maybe 5 times ever on camera. And it's perfectly reasonable for James Haskell to clarify what's going on, especially when as everyone else is so bloody quiet. And he, you know,
this was after half an hour, and it wasn't like Italy only just had suddenly done it. They'd been doing it for loads of times.
And did you think after half an hour all the England players were dealing with it really well?
No, I would say no. Do you know what? I'm not into like shaming individuals. If James Haskell didn't understand the law and the England pack didn't understand the law, then I say well done for having the courage to go up to the ref and ask. Well done, James Haskell. But I find it astonishing that 8 international rugby players don't know what the law is, and that no one in that whole side grabbed the team by the scruff of the neck and said, here you go, boys, what's going on here? And let me just follow that up with this. This is one of the times when it was used on camera. This is Wasps against Toulouse.
Yes, yep.
And this is Nathan Hughes, one of the men on the field. Brian O'Driscoll and Lawrence Delalio taking you through it. Here we go.
There's no offside line. Plays it brilliantly, waits for the pass to be affected, and manages to turn the ball over. Brilliant understanding of the rules from Nathan Hughes.
Agreed.
Brilliant understanding of the rules, right? So if you don't know the law, you can't take advantage of it from the other side, like Nathan Hughes did there.
These guys aren't on the field because they could be high-level barristers. They're on the field because they're good physical specimens.
So, unsurprisingly, I am somewhere in the middle. I think there's
no.
I think there's two. But
stop it!
I think you're actually talking about different issues here.
Go on.
You're talking about there's two things that James Haskell did. His very initial interaction with Poit was to say, "Can you please clarify what the law is for forming a ruck?" Which I'm with Tim on that. He should know. So after that, he went on, and I admire him for this actually, because no one else, and Hartley certainly didn't take control. He went on to say, well, how do we stop that? Like, to try and ask, how do we stop this? Which was when he said, if they're 1 metre away or 2 metres away.
Yeah. And,
but that is not in the law book, that 1 metre, 2 metres.
Was
meter.
That not clarified after the Chiefs, though? So to stop it, they said, if you're within 1 metre, it's classed as a ruck. So you've got to really be far away. Do you see what I mean?
Well, so a ruck, you just have to have contact with one of the players.
Yeah, so one of Haskell's questions was, can I just grab someone and pull him in?
Yeah.
Right, which is fair, because...
Yeah, that's fine.
Because, you know, when you stand off a
mall,
grab it.
Right? Yeah,
so that's the first question.
And that is
led on to the second question, right, which was this 1 metre, 2 metre thing, which is a complete mystery.
Going back and being pragmatic and looking at going forward, if you don't understand the laws, how can you break them? Like Richie McCaw would have done. I've got one other thing, which from Alex Lowe in the Times, great rugby writer, good lad as well, and he posted this on Twitter today, which is from a Times article in December, where he writes, and the little subheading is, England must beware Australia's clever trick. David Pocock, who is heading off on a 1-year sabbatical after today's game, caught out Ireland a week ago with a move seen in Super Rugby but seldom in Northern Hemisphere, Alex Lowe writes. The move is deceptively simple. If a team do not contest a breakdown, a ruck is not formed and there's no offside line. In its most basic form, the offside rule in rugby prevents players getting involved in play when they're standing in front of the ball. But with no offside line, there's nothing to stop Pocock sneaking into the Irish backline and intercepting the ball. Only a poor pass by Israel Falau a couple of phases later prevented a try. Mm-hmm. Paul Gustard said this week, if there is no ruck formed, there is no offside. That is one tactical plan people try and put in place, like teams might not contest a line out or teams might change the numbers in a line out. It's a way of trying to manipulate the attack and make them think differently. Paul Gustard, as England defensive coach, we are aware of it. We saw it. We will have plans in place. Quote from December.
But they clearly didn't.
Second half, when they came out, and by the way, this is a team that's not prepared for this. I mean, Gus Gord said he hadn't. I think it's the law is fine. They should just play it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. Those people, there were so many overreactions that I read on social media. People saying that this is going to ruin the game. Mm. Matt Dawson is a great example.
Exactly.
But I don't think it will at all, because teams will adapt. And England did adapt very well.
They did, but they needed Eddie Jones to help them adapt. And actually, if we're going to get to where England want to get to in 2019, they'll learn a massive lesson from this. And I think the wider point is, who are the people who are going to make those decisions and grab the team by the scruff of the neck?
I think that's the coach's job, personally. I mean, such a big change.
Well, let's go back. Ask Steve Hansen, ask Graham Henry if the team relied on the coaches for decision making and adapting in games when they won two World Cups.
I think you know what the answer to that question is, but I think you're being disingenuous, because very rarely do things like this ever happen.
Again, I'm only making the broader point that if England are going to get where they want to get, they need to have people that can have fluid decision making on the fly.
Okay, I do agree with you that England do need to be excellent excellent athletes, and also have guys that could figure out Krypton Factor if they needed to. It is a nice added advantage.
Now he's being disingenuous.
Me. I guess you do make a good point, because the RFU have got this big thing about decision makers and making these stupid games with the occasional forward pass. Some of them are very good, actually. Or like silly like kicking games. And when you're doing your RFU coaching badges, they make you play all sorts of funny games which look nothing like rugby. So, yeah, okay, maybe.
Well, is there anything else to talk about on that, on the England game? Because I don't think...
Owen Farrell was very peculiar.
He was very... It was probably the worst game I've ever seen Owen Farrell have.
Yeah.
I thought he was particularly poor. He's kicking as well, which is very unusual.
Yeah, it was very unusual. It was sort of symptomatic. England were just kind of passive, and I
think they were really rattled.
That's
the bigger worry.
I'll tell you one thing I would have liked to see Eddie Jones do earlier, actually, and it worked very well when he did it, was bring Jack Noel in. Because Johnny May in that kind of game was useless.
It's like throwing...
You've got a Ferrari out on the wing, but you're never, ever going to be able to get the ball out to him. So whereas Jack Noel...
Yeah, you've got the speed bumps in the road. You're not going to look good in a Ferrari.
Yeah.
Yeah, you live on a farm in Tanzania.
Yeah.
You've got a Ferrari.
Whereas Jack Noel, when he came on, he's so industrious, and he's always round the back of those rucks and following people in. So he was brilliant. Yeah. So I think that if Eddie Jones was really... I guess if this was a more important game, he might have done it earlier. But to really kind of earn his crust, I would have liked that Jack Noel change after 20 minutes or 30 minutes.
It's really screwed over England in terms of how they can judge their players. Because they did put out Teo as a bit of an experiment. He did all right.
I think I tend to disagree a little bit. I think that is a massive, massive positive for England going forward, because they'll come up with all kinds of strategies for if something we can't predict happens, what are we going to do? And it'll be like, we'll get the ball off the field for a line out. One of the props goes down injured. We have a chat. And it'll be just stuff like that.
Your point was more about the... You want to see these combinations.
Yeah, he wants to see in normal, everyday... if there is such thing as an everyday test match.
Yeah, I know.
You wanted to see how crisp and clean Danny Kerr can pass to George Ford, and that extra second that George Ford gets with the ball.
We wanted to see if BBT could take it to a new level of peak Teo.
Who?
Yeah, so Eddie Jones, in his post-match interview, he seemed frustrated and he said it wasn't rugby. But that might have been part of the frustration, because I'm sure he loves solving the problem, but he just didn't get to see what he was expecting to learn from
that
game.
I think you're probably right. Or equally, a lot of people on our Twitter account, too many to mention, in fact, have just said, oh no, this is classic kind of mind games. This is taking the media's focus off of the poor performance and onto this tactical thing, so that they're talking about that in very much a Jose Mourinho kind of fashion, which I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. I did think it was a little bit disrespectful of Eddie Jones to say it wasn't rugby, and it was like it was an Australia v New Zealand cricket match. And
bowling underarm.
Bowled underarm on the last ball.
Love it. Love it. Six. Have that.
the bowling underarm is a bit. That is definitely unsportsman.
Don't care.
Definitely.
Whereas I can win.
I actually quite like this as a tactic. No, what I would just say one last point on this before we get into the other games, which are also very good.
Oh yeah.
I was almost a little bit disappointed that Conor O'Shea, Brennan Venter didn't hold their nerve, because so what happens if Italy play very well in the first half, or as well as they're possibly, and they're within one score, and then immediately after half time, they roll the dice and start this tactic.
Yeah.
If they were within, if Italy were within one score, and then they started doing this,
yeah,
England would not have reacted.
Well, I thought of it the other way around. I thought, what if they just came out and played normal rugby? So England have got this like this plan. So I'd have thought, I was talking to someone in RGC. There you go. Ring that bell.
Ding.
And they were looking at the stats. This is 2 years ago, but they were looking at like the stats of their league, which they were going to go into from the last year. So they're about to get promoted. So they read the stats from the previous year to see what the trends were. And then they designed their game plan for next year around those trends, like everybody else does.
Yeah.
But surely that isn't the way to do it, is it? The way to do it is to read those trends, build a game plan, and then build a game plan to beat your own game plan, because that's the game plan everyone else will be using.
You've got to be one game plan ahead.
Yeah, and that's what Italy should have done, really.
And I actually think that this will become a tactic.
Like in power plays.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah. So they'll turn it on for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And just, completely change everything. Because as soon as you start... As soon as you're weak at the breakdown, you're not expecting any man to go in, then that's the perfect time to actually start flooding the breakdown as a defensive unit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where it might have interesting uses and tactical application.
And also, do you want to use this tactic against the All Blacks or Fiji? You know, if the counter to it is to keep the ball alive for multiple phases, it doesn't sound like a great strategy.
No.
It's a little bit, I thought Eddie Jones saying it wasn't rugby is a little bit like a boxing person saying that Muhammad Ali in the Rumble in the Jungle letting George Foreman punch himself out wasn't boxing.
Rope-a-dope.
Yeah,
rope-a-dope trick. And it will be, so next weekend, I feel sorry for every single referee who's going to referee from tier three downwards.
And that is what...
It is going to be chaos.
And that is what, maybe not in Matt Dawson's defence, he doesn't need me to defend him or anything, but... I don't think it was low. I think he gave an opinion, but he did back up in his tweets. He said...
Are you going for dinner with him or something?
He just said, just imagine what life will be like for referees next week. And it was interesting to watch it for one game. I do not want to watch game after game like that.
I'm quite interested to see. I think it will be used as a power play.
Yeah. I don't think it poses a problem, because I think the counter to it is far more exciting than the actual ploy itself.
Yeah. So from... Well, you're talking about some leadership or lack of leadership.
Just one thing, just to clarify, David Molyneux on our Facebook live feed, hello, David, and other viewers, he said the 1 metre thing was, and this explains this for me and maybe for you guys as well, you can pull a player into a ruck if he's standing within one metre of the ruck. So there you go.
So yeah,
Thank you, David.
I was looking for that in the law book. So has that been a clarification since
then?
Was that
not from the Chiefs? I'm sure they circulated something like, this is not rugby and this is what we're going to do.
Did World Rugby say it wasn't in the spirit of the game?
Yeah, ridiculous.
David Molyneux then followed it up and said, have any of you podcasters tried to borrow a cup of sugar outside a Paris nightclub? we'll talk about that in the midweek domestic podcast. So that is a club, that's a club matter, isn't it? Sorry.
Well, maybe we're better talking about that today, because by midweek there might be some further developments in that case.
Oh yes, you're quite right. Yes. So if you didn't see the headlines, it was James O'Connor. No, well, the French police outside a nightclub in Paris.
Why did he ask the French police for them? For it?
Arrested. arrested Ali Williams, James O'Connor, and thought to be known drug dealers in France, or suspected drug dealers outside a Paris nightclub. And Ali Williams and James O'Connor had 2 grams of cocaine on them.
Well, yes. You know, look.
And apparently Ali Williams was in the car with these two chaps. James O'Connor was stood outside the car, thought to be as lookout.
The most inconspicuous lookout.
Yeah, with his Justin Bieber hair.
Yeah.
Hey, old bro, watch the car.
Bleached blonde-haired international rugby player.
Do you know what? I don't care about this. I mean, it's one of those things like, I don't know. James O'Connor sure has got a bit of rugby left in him. Ali Williams, if he's not retired, he will be very, very soon.
Is that what they call it these days on the street?
Yes, exactly.
Well, have a gram of rugby.
Ali Williams, so he retired, and then he was employed as Dan Carter's minder in Paris.
By the way, and then he came out of retirement to play for Racing.
Can I say, Dan Carter's been been listening to him. He's been listening to him quite intently by the sounds of things.
I know. So he's Dan Carter's minder, supposed to be keeping him out of trouble. 1 week ago, Dan Carter gets arrested for drink driving, and the week later, the minder, the sensible one, is buying cocaine.
I guess it's just good culture, isn't it, really?
Good culture, bro.
Exactly.
Speaking of culture, before we depart England, there was an article in the paper this week, did you see it, where Dylan Hartley insists that an England player cleans the dressing room before they leave.
Yes, like hose down the dressing room.
Like the All Blacks that they're trying to emulate.
I can imagine.
On our Facebook feed, we have a book in between JB and Phil. The House of Lancaster is in the rugby dungeon. And that was one of Stuart Lancaster's culture points.
It's idiotic, isn't it? You know, you got these high-level, top, world-class athletes, and you're making them sweep things. It's just stupid. The whole thing's stupid.
What I don't like about it is the need to tell everyone.
Yeah, exactly. It's like giving to charity, but telling everyone you're giving to charity.
Yeah, posting on Facebook. Look at me, I've just given 50 quid to charity.
There's a great Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where Ted Danson and do you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I've seen
bits of it.
Oh, it's brilliant. So Larry David and Ted Danson are both donating to this hospital, and Ted Danson does it anonymously. His wing is anonymous, and everyone goes up to him, still knows it's him, and goes pats him on the back. Oh, you're amazing, you're incredible. And Larry David has his name on it, but didn't know not to make it anonymous, and everyone frowns upon him. So yeah, Ted Danson did it anonymously, but just the word got out. So yeah, the word's getting out about England's culture.
Yes.
Anyway, but you were saying, Phil.
Well, going from some leadership or questionable leadership onto perhaps some more, because I think it'd be good to discuss Scotland-Wales.
Mm.
Go on then.
Absolutely. I think leadership is a theme in this weekend, or lack of.
Yeah.
I've got a big issue with Alan Wynne-Jones as a captain. I mean, so it was 2 weeks ago, three weeks ago now, the Ireland game, and we were on this podcast saying, why didn't he take points?
Yeah.
He had easy points on offer, and he opted to kick to the corner.
And same again in the England game?
And then 16-13 down.
Ireland game, England game?
Did it not happen in the Ireland game as well?
No, they've not played Ireland.
Oh, not played in Ireland. Yeah. Whatever the first
Italy.
Game.
Italy.
Italy. Oh, no, maybe not. Maybe not. No, it was just the England game then. And then 16-13, 50-odd, 60 minutes on the clock, 3 points down, kick in a reasonable kicking position, not out of range for anyone. What did you see that went on there?
I didn't see this event. It didn't really register to me.
So, I thought he said, we'll go for the sticks, that the referee actually pointed at the sticks, and then Dan Bigger said, no, not going for the sticks.
Is Dan Bigger not limping?
Don't fancy it. But Halfpenny would be kicking anyway, surely.
That's interesting. Don't know.
And it was overridden. But there is two parts. There's one, which is, I thought once the referee has signalled, once you've told the referee and he's signalled at the post, you have to take the kick. And two, Alan Wynne-Jones, if he's captain and he wants to go for the post, he should be going for the post, and nothing else should change that.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, this is peculiar, isn't it? Because I just thought, well, maybe Bigger doesn't fancy it. And that's a perfectly legitimate reason not to go for sticks, even if the captain wants it.
Well, in that circumstance, if it's right on the edge of his range, you'd say, Lee or Dan, whatever it is, do you fancy it? How are you feeling? If it's from 54 metres and you know it's right on the edge of the range, you'd ask the question. But this was in range. It was wide. It was far out, but it was well within range. It wasn't an easy kick, but it was a kickable penalty.
I look at it like this. It was a bit like, do you remember I don't want to bring it up, Rob Shaw...
Yeah.
George Ford committee and other players getting involved against Twickenham against Wales in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And it seemed like there was a committee on it.
Rather than a leader.
Rather than someone. And it felt a little bit like Alan Wynne-Jones was sort of standing back a little bit, and it felt like Dan Bigger was sort of running the show. So Alan Wynne-Jones said, we'll go for post, and then Dan Bigger came in, grabbed the ball and went, we'll go for the corner, Al, shall we?
Yeah.
We'll go for the corner.
I don't know. I mean,
and Alan Wynne-Jones didn't say no. And I understand you need to get the kicker to go, yeah, I'm on for this. But he had Lee Halfpenny. He could have asked if Dan Bigger didn't want to do it and Alan Wynne-Jones still wanted to kick.
I assume that Lee Halfpenny would have done it anyway. And that's why it's weird.
Yeah, that is
because
why.
Because it's not him not fancying it, saying no, Lee's not doing it either.
And it seemed like Sam Warburton was involved in this as well. It seemed like it was more Dan Bigger and Sam Warburton than Alan Wynne-Jones as captain. Now, that's fine if that's how you run your team. What I didn't like was after the game, Alan Wynne-Jones then saying to the press, oh yeah, I wanted to go for the post, but the kickers didn't want to. As far as I'm concerned, he threw his kickers under the bus.
And didn't accept responsibility.
Didn't accept responsibility,
decision.
Yeah. So if you're a captain on the field, if your decision, whatever the decision you do, whether you go for the corner and go, all right, Dan, you'd rather go for the corner, fine, we'll go with that, still own that decision as captain.
Yeah.
Don't palm it off and go, he didn't want to, so he did what he wanted. Either there's a little faction there in the Welsh team and Dan Bigger was just doing what he wants and not listening, but either way I don't like the look from Alan Wynne-Jones. And I think piecing this together with the other bits of evidence, there's no doubt about what he's like as a player, but I don't want to trust him as Lions captain.
Is there an element of just a bit of hindsight here? I mean, if what had happened had come off, they went to the corner, they scored a try, everyone might be tempted to do the whole All Blacks thing and say, yeah, well, we'd have a captain, but actually we have several captains and it's a leadership committee and, you know, it's all decentralised and this is the newfangled thing. So if it goes well, everyone's happy. If not, and it's the same with Robshaw. I mean, I never criticised Robshaw for the line-out, to be fair, because if it went okay, he would have been a hero.
Things are very easy with hindsight, aren't they?
Yeah. Second bit, though, about the...
Own the decision.
That is more worrying, because they should all have been on the same page, which is, yeah, well, we made the decision for this, that, and the other reason, and stuck with that. So,
yes, so I think we're all broadly in agreement there. But that was a small part of the game.
Well, so just on that one, Alan Wynne-Jones, if people are, it's sort of an assumption, I think, that he's going to end up as Lions captain. I've got really serious reservations about it. I don't even think I think he's not even on form one of the best two locks, but I could be quite happy with him in the side. But I just don't think he's... I've got big reservations about his leadership.
Well, if you don't think he's a form lock, and that's completely your opinion, throw him on the wing instead of George North, because he'd be equally as effective.
Yeah, completely with you on that, mate.
Yes. Well, I was going to say there's some amazing Scotland performance, but maybe we should go say, yeah, George North didn't have a particularly good game.
George North was treated like a five-year-old by Tim Visser.
Yeah, and Tim Visser opposite him had a brilliant game. I think
best game seen him play, I think.
Yeah, he would have been very, very close to being man of the match if Finn Russell hadn't been 100% kicker and played superbly all round.
Yeah, no.
Tim Visser's like, he looks like the V on his back. He's like a GQ shape, isn't he?
I tell you what, between Maitland and Visser, they've got some handsome wingers. Now, I've been on Maitland's back a little bit about his performances of late. But I think I'm kind of justified, because this week, the difference between how Visser plays with that certainty and that power compared to Maitland of late, who's just been so hesitant every time he gets the ball, it makes a world of difference.
Yeah. Yeah, Visser was outstanding. And there wasn't just one moment. There was a number of moments where he completely outplayed George North, including picking him up and carrying him into touch, which was brilliant. He beat him one-on-one in the 5-metre channel.
Yeah,
where he stepped
that.
Inside and outside.
It. That's the kind of boast that you hear, isn't it, from like wingers from 1960.
Yeah.
Davy McDougall used to say, I could beat anyone in 5 yards of space, and then you go and beat a dentist, playing for Leicester. It's quite incredible that you can do it in the professional ranks. But what has happened to George North, though? I do not know.
No. George North didn't look like the same player. I don't think he's... So, I've said it before, he wouldn't be anywhere near my Lions team on form.
No way.
He wouldn't even be close.
Do you think he was just fulfilling the Cuthbert role?
I don't think he's got the, in a way, I feel a bit sorry for Alex Cuthbert, because George North is getting yeah. getting very little stick. And if Alex Cuthbert had played and done the things that George North did, he would have been absolutely rinsed
unless,
by us as much as anyone.
Finally we've realised what that is, the Welsh game plan, to have one clown one clown on the wing at all times.
Well, you need a scapegoat.
Yeah.
That's George, what it is.
George will be playing scapegoat. Liam, you'll be a hero.
That's what it is. I feel I've been a little bit unfair to Alan Wynne-Jones, and I just want to balance things up a little bit by saying I might have not liked his captaincy being decisive enough with regards to the kicking, but the way he slapped Fraser Brown on the ass in one of the rucks was like something. Well, that was a bright spot in an otherwise poor second half for Wales. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
I've not seen
that. So Alan Wynne-Jones arrives at a ruck, and Fraser Brown's kind of lying kind of in a possibly illegal position. Rather than ruck him out the way, Alan Wynne-Jones just decides to, and you can hear it on the camera, and you can just see him slapping his ass. It's, if you've got the energy to slap someone on the backside, you've got the energy to ruck him out the way. But it was like 50 Shades of Grey, or 50 Shades of Brown.
Fifty Shades of Johnny and Richie Grey.
You know, back to the captaincy thing, there is a criticism of Alan Wynne-Jones. I think he's a fine player. I mean,
no doubt about that.
He's won a couple of Pro 12 titles, I guess, but no big shakes in Europe.
No, he's won a couple of Grand Slams as a player.
Yeah. He's won he captained a successful Lions team for that final two tests, was it?
Scrap that thought. It's completely unfair.
Yeah,
he's absolutely fine. Yeah. Sam Warburton did play well, though, and I wonder if he's playing his way into Lions captain contention again.
Well, on that front, and it will kind of link us into Scotland, how about this as a question? So, Wales had the most players of any nation in the last Lions tour. Will they have the fewest on this tour, or will Warren Gatland, or do they deserve to have the fewest on this tour, but maybe Warren Gatland will show his loyalty to his favourites?
No idea. Zero idea on this.
Well, on merit and on form, I would argue Wales probably Warburton.
Don't argue. Say it. Predict
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, no, I'm not going to. I'm not going to predict.
Hear me now. Believe me later.
No, yeah, go on, Tim. Let's hear it.
I predict that Warren Gatland will take more Welshmen than I think deserve it. But I think Warburton will deserve it. Alan Wynne-Jones will deserve it. Possibly Ken Owens, because Hooker's a bit of a weak spot.
Yep. Yeah. What about
and in the back line, Liam Williams? And I kind of,
what about
potentially stop there?
Scott Williams.
Potentially, because inside centre's a weak spot.
It's a hard position. I think if you take the Six Nations in isolation, and maybe not just the Six Nations, Six Nations and the Autumn Internationals, where Wales didn't play well, if you just look at those, I think you'd have probably only those guys.
But you missed two guys. Reece Webb.
Reece Webb. Yeah, completely. Yeah.
The other guy, right, I've been thinking about this, is the backup scrum half, Gareth Davis. Now, that sounds madness.
No, it doesn't sound like madness, because it is a weak spot. Hooker, scrum half, inside centre are the three trouble spots for the Lions.
You think scrum half? I think you've got Connor Murray.
Well, I mean, but like depth, you've got two. You've got two really good ones, and then you don't know. It's like, well,
Murray Webb Davis
probably could end up being Laidlaw, but
Could be Laidlaw, but it could be Youngs or Kerr, depending on.
Thing about Wales, right, is you just need to think about their starting 15, and then gauge who in that starting 15 deserves to go, because behind it there isn't an awful lot.
No.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So it's not like you've got, Elliot Daly and Jack Noel and someone else. Once you've gone through that 15, if you don't think there's anyone worth going, you're going to struggle. It's not going to be Gareth Anscombe, is it?
The point that I was going to make was, so if you just look at the last few Wales games, you are struggling a bit, but you've got a number of guys who've got a lot of experience and a lot of credit already. So guys like Faletau, like Alan Wynne-Jones, like Jonathan Davies, like North, like Halfpenny, who've got huge amounts of experience and huge amounts of credit, albeit their form right now is not great. And I would expect that Gatland will trust a few of those because he knows them.
I think Faletau is one of the guys who'll be nailed on.
Yeah, Faletau will.
He will go, but if you were just picking on form...
He did not look
good.
How about Moriarty?
He's a six for me.
But he'll go, right?
Maybe. That six is one of the most hotly contested positions.
Not
again.
Eight, no? Easlip, Faletau, CJ, Nathan Hughes, Billy.
That is also a hotly contested position.
Yeah. Maybe he doesn't then.
I don't think he will. Because
Oh, someone's Instagramming.
Well, I'm just trying out Instagram Live as well. We're Facebook Live, we're Instagram Live at the same time. What's wrong with covering all bases?
No, absolutely.
Just give it a try. See, there's already four people watching on that already. And that's in 4 seconds.
Wow.
So anyway.
We're such hip kids now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Hip cats, that's what they call it on the street.
Going on to the Scotland team.
Yes, well, because before we get to that, and let's segue between the two. So Wales, maybe on form, could have the least number of internationals of any of the home nations.
Yeah.
Represented amongst the Lions squad.
Rob Howley is going on the Lions tour, isn't he?
Oh, God.
Have I made that up?
Don't remind me. No, he's going.
Oh, my word. I mean, I just feel sorry enough for Wales as it is, having Rob Howley. I mean,
well, I think that's a little unfair.
Do you really? Did you watch the game yesterday? They were clueless.
I think you might have a point. I just feel it's unkind.
Oh my word!
I know. I just feel sorry for him. He looks like a man that shouldn't be there. It's not like he is a world class coach who's been parachuted in and doing a terrible job. He's a guy that shouldn't be there. I just feel bad that he's getting so much of a hammering.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It isn't good.
No, it isn't good. But then the way Wales are playing isn't good. They just can't attack. They're so predictable.
They did. They finished off the Liam Williams try very nicely. Even Halfpenny made a pass.
Yes, a complete
which is
pass.
Astonishing. But it was Scott Williams who made the long pass, which made it all possible.
Well, in this tournament, he's made a couple of try scoring passes in that fashion. So again, maybe he's one that's on would make the squad. But Scotland, on the flip side, could have the most number of Scottish players on the plane that they've had in many, many years. And here's a little teaser for you.
Ooh.
And whether you're watching on Facebook Live, Instagram Live, see if you can guess these. Howley is a bum. It's just one comment that's just been left.
That's nice,
see, the calibre of Instagram is perhaps not what it is on some of the other channels.
Can you name the last five Scotland players to have played in a Lions test match?
Yes, almost certainly.
In a test match?
In a test match.
I can do that.
Okay.
Come on then, gents.
Maitland.
He was on the bench, didn't play.
Oh, for the first hurdle. All right, no, I can't.
I think that's right. He was on the bench in the first test, but didn't play in 2013.
So, Hogg travelled in 2013, but presumably he didn't play because Halfpenny started.
Yep, he didn't play. He didn't play in a test match. If I just tell you the last player to start a Lions test.
No. I want to guess.
Okay.
Was it all the way back in South Africa?
No. Well, which South Africa?
No.
Which South Africa?
Are you joking?
Well, if I tell you the last player to start, I mean, there are people that have come off the bench.
Was it Murray in South Africa? No, hang on.
You and Murray. Perhaps.
Well, let's go back. So 2013.
I was talking about
you guess there was one person who featured in the final test for 12 minutes
in 2013,
and that was the only Scotland player that played any part in any test match in 2013.
Right. So the last one was 2013. Yeah. Yeah. Of course it was. So in the final test match, and that would have been
Richie Gray.
It was Richie Gray. Richie Gray in 2013 played 12 minutes in the final test. Sean Maitland was an unused replacement on the bench.
Did Ryan Grant go?
I don't know.
He was called up as a replacement, wasn't he?
He was on holiday there.
No.
But this is people who started a test match.
Yeah.
So one in two.
Oh. No, he didn't. He definitely didn't start, but he was called up, and he's Irish, so it doesn't matter.
Tommy Court.
So there was one in 2013. In 2009, there was none. No Scottish player involved in any test match squad.
That was South Africa 2009.
Oh yeah, of course it was. So New Zealand was the one before that.
New Zealand was 2005, there was none involved in any test match in that tour.
So I can nail this, because I'm actually pretty good at this. Okay, so it was Tom Smith. It would have been, I think... Andy Nicol was on the bench.
Tom Smith is the last player to have started a test match for Scotland in a Lions test, 2001.
Yeah, one. Wow.
Which isn't that unreal, 15, 16 years ago.
It is unreal.
And then
before that it was Scott Murray in the second row.
Nope.
Was it not?
Nope. He was the only person in the 2001 tour.
Birch Pountney?
So the last time there was more than we've had one person off the bench in 2013.
Oh, Gregor Townsend the time before.
Gregor
that.
Townsend. Alan Tait and Tom Smith, and Rob Wainwright was a replacement. So you have to go back to 1997 for Scotland to have any more than one person involved in a matchday squad, and they've actually only had Richie Gray and Tom Smith between 2013 and 97.
Wow.
Whereas you look at them now, and who would you think is not just in the squad, but who do you think's got a realistic shot at a test start?
Seymour Hogg,
definitely. Visser against one of the stars of the last Lions tour completely outplayed him.
It wasn't even close.
No.
It wasn't even close. Greys?
In the pack, yeah. One of the Greys is definitely...
Nell? Because I've not been impressed with any props yet.
Nell does have a chance.
Alan Hardiman's a joker on here. He said Ross Ford. Oh no, maybe he was guessing at one of the people that's been involved before.
Yeah, he's definitely toured with the Lions, hasn't he, Ross Ford?
Banter. It's actually quite a few. Laidlaw, no. Maybe. No, Strauss isn't close, is he, because of the amount of eights? Maybe one of the sevens, but I doubt that. Yes, and Tim Swinson. So.
Swinners.
But they could realistically have between three to five starters in a Lions team.
Yeah.
Which, when you actually look at their record, that is incredible.
Well, that's like the last 20 years.
Exactly.
Better than the whole of the last 20 years combined.
Yeah. So that as an illustration of where Scotland are at and how incredible it is that they find themselves in the position they're in. And let's be fair, the job Vern Cotter has done. And do you think, and again, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but are Scotland mad to be letting Vern Cotter go?
I was thinking about this. I've thought about this a few times recently, but this could blow up in their face. Because if Scotland are actually in a position...
Fern Cotton.
Scotland, they do actually have a chance of winning the whole thing, as in winning the Six Nations.
Yeah.
And they've also got a chance of winning their first ever Six Nations triple crown.
Is that right?
They've never won a triple crown since...
No.
Since the Six Nations started in 2000.
Extraordinary.
And if Fern Cotton wins the thing, you're gonna have taken Glasgow's director of rugby, and who has turn Glasgow around, turn them into a very, very good team.
And 10 of that starting lineup for Scotland were Glasgow.
So it's like the foundations for the Scotland team. You're almost destroying the foundations and the house itself in one foul swoop.
Hang on. So one of the questions I ask myself, and I'll now expand this question to you boys as well, is the success of Scotland based around Glasgow's success, or is it based around Vern Cotter's success? And I'm not sure that's as clear-cut as we think.
I don't think you can have one without the other.
Yeah. So they're kind of... I completely see what you're saying. They're going to tear down the whole thing. But on the other hand, Glasgow are in rude health to the point that they're now shipping off players who, a few years ago, they would kill for, and they're now being shipped off to Edinburgh.
Yeah.
They're going to get one of the world's best coaches in Dave Rennie. And also, Cockers is going to go to Edinburgh. So, I think they're going to go from strength to strength.
Yeah, you might be right. And it might be, maybe I'm being overly negative. But it does feel like Fern Cotton's done a brilliant job. And he's not really getting the appreciation he perhaps deserves. That's where I'm coming from.
I might have missed a couple, by the way. Potentially, Ross Ford was a sub in the third test in 09. But I don't know.
Was he an used sub?
And Gordon Bullock in the third test in 05. I'll check on that one. Thank you, Facebook Live, for keeping me honest. Appreciate it. It's a risk for Scotland. And with the World Cup 2 years away, I think it's a risk that... And again, it's easy to say with hindsight. I think it's a risk that is looking like an unnecessary one to have taken, with the trajectory they're on and where Fern Cotton has got them and where they're looking like they're going.
It's a risky one, isn't it?
It is a risk.
It's
a risk. And, interestingly, this Scotland, by beating Wales by a margin of more than 15 points, they were beaten by 16 points, didn't they? Yeah. They got extra ranking points by beating Wales by more than 15. Mm. Scotland rise to their highest ever world ranking of fifth.
Wow.
And Wales drop to ninth, which means they're currently in the group of death position.
Ugh.
Yeah, but that's exactly where they want to be, isn't it?
Should we be looking at Wexit from Tier 1 for Wales?
Yeah, why not? throw in Georgia, see what happens. Oh, actually, Georgia are playing Wales, aren't they, in the autumn?
Yeah, it's great to see.
It is good to see.
Oh, well, on that one, no, I don't want to necessarily depart this game if there's other things we need to talk about, but just as you brought it up, what did you make of John Fearn, the CEO of the Six Nations, which I understand is a corporation and a business?
Yep.
Yeah.
His comments saying it's not up to us to develop other unions.
Yeah, he's absolutely right.
And I guess that you'd have that.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. I mean,
cutthroat black and white approach.
But there's
JB.
So much belly aching and crocodile tears. Oh, that isn't his job. His job is to look after the shareholders who own the business of the Six Nations. And he's absolutely right. And I'm not going to get into what I think should happen next, because I've said it over and over again. But this is the man's job. Let him do his job. We don't all need to be continually virtue signalling at everyone else.
Oh, hold on. Jay, mate, people can disagree with your opinion without virtue signalling.
It's tough.
People can have a different opinion.
Tough.
But my opinion on it is, and if you didn't see it, John Fearn said, when asked about the structure of the Six Nations and Italy and how they hadn't been competing in Georgia and do we need to give them more support, he said... There's
no vacancy. There isn't a vacancy. He's absolutely right.
There's no vacancy. It's not our job to develop other unions. Now, my perspective on that would be, it may not be what he wants. He may not want relegation promotion. He may not want or care about Georgia. Well, no, actually, he may not. However, he needs to recognise that he works, and his success is
based on this amazing competition that he's built.
Is in an ecosystem of rugby success, and it's in everybody's interest, all organisations, all rugby clubs at all levels, all teams, all people involved, to grow rugby as much as we can. And I thought the way that he expressed himself and his views, I thought was actually pretty deplorable, to be honest. And I
sounds a little bit virtue signalling to me.
No,
it's just a man doing a job.
Mate, do you know what? It's a bit like when Donald Trump says, if there's stuff that he doesn't agree with like in the media, he says, oh, that's not true, or fake news.
But
like,
it isn't fake, is it?
Calling a different opinion virtue signalling.
It's pretty... You know. Look, he's just doing a job, and we all need to get over it. I mean, quite frankly, he is wrong. He's wrong that it's full. It's actually oversubscribed. Italy should be out. And Georgia should not join the Six Nations for a number of reasons. Now, World Rugby should get their act together and make sure they have their international space in the autumn. But he's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. Right to say so. So no issues here.
Anything else from Scotland?
I want to hear your view. Phil,
we've spoken about Georgia joining the Six Nations.
About Georgia, about a high profile figure in Dublin, a high profile. I think I would imagine World Rugby will be absolutely furious about his comments.
So if you take just the literal word, all he's said is that's not part of our mandate for the Six Nations, which it's not part of their mandate. But I agree with you, Tim, that it is in his interest to grow the game. But he's not saying that he's not growing the game. He's just saying that it's not part of his mandate to let Georgia in.
In the same way, it's not part of Eddie Jones's mandate to grow the Georgia national team. It's just not his job. I will just say this: an interesting thing which I thought the other day when Romania beat Germany.
Yep.
Sorry, Germany beat Romania.
Yes.
I mean, my thing is, keep these teams together, keep this competition going, because it's only going to grow. And a few years ago, it was Romania who were going to be the seventh team of the Six Nations. Now it's Georgia. If you had removed Romania...
Well, a few years ago, it was going to be Romania that were the sixth team. Romania were in the very first World Cup.
I mean, if you had removed Romania, Germany wouldn't... Germany wouldn't have been able to play them. And if you remove Georgia, well, then what are you going to do about Romania? So what I'm trying to say is you need to keep these teams together playing and improve them as a whole, as a unit. As a unit.
I'm not disagreeing or agreeing with that. I'm just saying that I think as a high profile figure, I think his comments were
contrary
to everybody's interest,
not
in the interest of the game of rugby. You can be honest without, but you can.
He was honest though, yeah. Was he honest?
I think he was really careless and really.
No, that wasn't what I asked. Was he honest?
Huh?
Was he honest? I mean, it was a pretty honest answer. You can't disagree with that.
Okay, it doesn't mean I have to like it.
No, absolutely not. It's just the way of the world, and there are other people doing extremely good work with Georgia. I don't think it's down to him.
I'm not saying it's down to him. I'm just saying it's down to everyone, and I think we should be a bit more open minded about growing the game in general. And I'm guessing that World Rugby would be pretty furious with his comments, if I had to guess.
I actually think that Georgia have anything, they need the infrastructure behind them.
Exactly.
So they need to get a team playing professionally in a European league.
Oh, you don't mean the actual infrastructure to get to the stadium, because that's another problem. And that's not me being flippant either. It is a problem.
No, they've got a 50,000-seater stadium that they fill out every home game. As in
the international travel, the fans, it isn't easy.
No, but they need... The only way that's going to set up is actually getting a domestic team playing.
So
Jaguares style team.
So just as a flip side, he could have been just as honest. Maybe he doesn't agree with this, but actually, if I was in the position of the Six Nations, he could have said, there are no plans to include Georgia. We don't think that's in the interest of the game. However, we think the development of Georgia, Romania, Germany, Spain is absolutely vital to the long-term success of the game and European rugby, and we're going to do X, Y, and Z to try and help. Done. Well, I'd be happy. World Rugby would be happy. Georgia would be happy.
To be fair, I haven't seen the whole interview. There's no... I'd be amazed if he didn't say something to that effect later on or before.
But we don't know.
That doesn't sell
newspapers, though.
No, exactly
not. Clicks.
Exactly not. And we do like, as a media consuming society, just to take one paragraph and run with it. That's why it doesn't bother me.
Did you read the recent headline that was Wales cancer test match in Tonga?
Sorry?
There was a recent headline.
Go on.
Wales cancelled test match in Tonga.
No, I had not heard this.
Which is a bit rugby clickbait-ish, because I clicked on it thinking That's terrible if they were going to play a game in Tonga. And it's now being moved to New Zealand. But only because the Tongan Union haven't got their act together and sorted out the stadium.
So what a surprise.
The stadium will be partially under construction, so you can't host a test match
there. I simply don't believe it. The Tongan Union weren't competent. No.
Perhaps there is more. Anyway, we've spoken about that far, far too much. And there was another very good game of rugby this week in Ireland, France.
Yeah.
Did you boys see that?
Yes, I did, actually.
I certainly did.
I mean, the point which is made about this time and time again, and I suppose will be made until the man retires, how often can Johnny Sexton run a loop move and it still
and it
works?
Still works. So the first time he run it, or the first time when it really worked in that first half, Gael Ficou, who was defending in that at 13 channel, he actually turned his back. He did like a 360, turned completely facing the wrong way. Like, it was like he'd never seen anything like it. But it's what Johnny Sexton does virtually every single time he gets the ball in that position.
Yeah.
And it works like a treat.
What's the... I know the form is temporary, class is permanent. What's the other one about fashion versus style? There are some...
Style and substance.
Not sure.
No, yeah, there's...
Yeah, because there are some tactics that come and go, but Johnny Sexton's loop, I mean, that is style.
That will never go out of fashion.
Exactly. That's it. Is it style never goes out of fashion?
Yeah.
There you go.
Something like that. Style never goes out of fashion.
What great broadcasting.
It was interesting to see, because Johnny Sexton has hardly played...
Sorry, I just laughed out loud. I was just reading some of the Facebook. I'm just going to interrupt for this one. Just because I interrupted it with a laugh, I might as well explain why I was laughing.
Go on,
Martin Bell, when you were saying about the infrastructure in Georgia's...
Does he play at the
AJ ground, really difficult to get to. Martin Bell, do Georgia play at the AJ Bell then?
Well, look, I'm genuinely looking forward to watching a game in Romania, because it'll save time compared to going to the AJ Bell.
Oh, yeah. Much easier to get to.
I apologise.
Bucharest.
You're making a wonderful point about Ireland, France.
No, it's just before the game, I was very interested to see how Johnny Sexton would go. He's played, it feels like, hardly any rugby in the past 6 months. He seems to be consistently injured and comes back for a couple of games and then gets injured again. But he is such a good player.
Yeah.
He just turns it on. He goes from nothing to international class 10 like that.
Completely agree.
Is he really small, or are his shoulder pads massive?
he's not the most developed, as in strength and conditioning is not top of his priority list. But he's remarkably strong.
Yeah.
As in, some of the hits that he puts in on blokes much bigger than him are surprising. He punches well above his weight.
I didn't think it was a great day for Sean O'Brien and CJ Stander.
They're all the same person, aren't they?
Yeah.
After
a
lot of research, I can conclusively confirm that.
And if I were Ireland, my response to that would be, I think they don't need both of them in balance. You need Peter Omani.
Yeah.
Which was the point that you were making a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, what would be wrong with starting with Sean O'Brien and bringing on CJ Stander for the last 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
It's not a bad option. I think, so France is obviously the biggest pack, and they're enormous, and the usual brutality of Sean O'Brien and CJ Stander is always going to be less effective versus France, but it will be more effective against other teams. It'll be interesting to see how they go on against Wales, because they've got, in Warburton and Tipperick, they've got two significantly lighter flankers.
Although Warburton's a big unit, isn't he?
Warburton is.
He's a big lad.
But he's built like a 400-metre runner. Do you know what I mean? He's not,
yeah, I know
he's
what
not
you
big
mean.
Like Stander is.
And he looks like that character out of Ice Age.
And he doesn't like that character.
What animal is he? Sloth?
Know.
No. I don't know.
Yeah, might be, yeah,
Seth
maybe.
The Sloth? I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, it might be a sloth.
Facebook Live or Twitter or whatever, at Rugby Podcast.
Someone will tell us. But Warburton doesn't have anywhere near the kind of explosive power of O'Brien or CJ Sander.
Or as Gordon Darcy just kept referring to it, as farmer strength.
Yes.
I almost think that's not very fair. Say, hold on, he's worked really hard at that. He's grafted in the weights room for a decade. Oh, he's just got a bit of farmer strength.
No, he's been stacking cows since he's been 3 years old.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, yeah. He doesn't need to work out farmer. It's almost as embarrassing as doing when players thank God. It's like, oh, right, well, you didn't work for it. No one else worked for it. God just prefers you.
Yeah, God prefers you, doesn't like the other team.
Yep.
I suppose people like Hendo don't look like they should be as strong as they are. Maybe that's kind of... That.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Oh, I just got attacked by JB's vacuum cleaner.
Mm. Dyson.
Ooh, why's the vacuum cleaner in the dungeon? So, yeah, I mean, the flanker battle will be fascinating because I think players like Warburton, that leaner, fitter build, do tend to sort of grow into games. Because, you know, it's like the old McCaw saying, which is he doesn't care about being the strongest player for the first 10. It's the last 10.
Yeah.
So that might play in something.
France were blowing out their ass after 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you know what? It didn't look good, did it, for the vaunted Irish front row, which is meant to be the Lions front row by all accounts?
They did all right. They had a couple of scrums where they struggled. But I thought they did all right. And I thought Rory Best did play pretty well. And against that enormous French pack, he hit 22 out of 22 lineouts.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Which is, yeah.
Could he do any better?
The percentages are up there. They're right up there, certainly.
When I was looking at the Irish team, Sexton, top comeback. I'm just looking at my notes here. Sexton, top comeback, like you say, just looked like he'd never been away.
Yeah.
Ringrose, I really like this guy.
So
he's a tough cookie.
I'm in
for a little lad.
Two minds, there. Yeah. I'm in two minds about Ringrose. So some of his attacking stuff is absolutely brilliant.
His footwork's brilliant.
Yeah, but he is half the size of some of the people he's playing against. Yeah. And there are times when you can tell.
What, is he 21 still though?
Yeah, he's only
he's,
young.
He's gonna be. He's like, it's amazing. They're just growing him. They've been in the laboratory going right. Bod, his lifespan is as a player is coming to an end. We need someone. Just yeah. got this kid.
He's impressive. He's very impressive.
There's times when he takes it into contact and it is like, it's like Reece Priestland going into contact, which is never a good look. Like, just men against boys.
But that's what I noticed in this France game is he actually, as the game went on, he started, and let's just remember, he made his debut unexpectedly against the All Blacks.
Yeah.
And I just think he's
what
he's already done already at international level is hinting at a massive future. But he really trucked it up a couple of times as the game went on. I also wrote Zeebo terrible. He had a shocker.
Yeah, he had a shocker.
He does tend to do this. I mean, since the All Blacks game, he's been on a ridiculous high. He was great over
on an Ali Williams, James O'Connor high.
Exactly. He's been good in the Pro 12. I've watched one game over Christmas. So far so good. I've got him as a nailed on line, but you are right. He did sort of crumble.
Yeah, yeah. I was not impressed at all. There was a few pretty basic errors.
Someone who I thought had a big game, and in the context of Talupe Faletau not being back into form, Jamie Heaslip he was the one player in that Irish back row that.
Yeah, and I thought he was done. So
What was it? Flat track bully against France though.
Yeah, he was class again. When Serin,
the commentators love talking about how he's old. He's got some sort of old school handsome French look.
Yeah, it's a bit weird that. When he made that break and he slipped tracked him back
with those kind of that sort of floppy hair, he reminds me of the cartoon character. D'Artagnan. Now, I have actually gone back to look up D'Artagnan, and he looks nothing like him. I can confirm.
The way you say D'Artagnan, I find it really interesting. D'Artagnan. that was the cartoon where he had his saber sword thing, and he chopped up the apple.
Yeah.
When it was in the air. That. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
I had a mate that nouns are. Oh, I think it's like 1-4-1, then 1-4. Oh,
no!
One of my best mates when I was a kid really fancied the girl dog in that.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. He doesn't look like D'Artagnan. He looks like the the one which is basically a Springer Spaniel because of the ears coming down.
There's Pathos and Aramos and one other. I can't remember.
Yeah, bloody, tell you what, bloody good theme tune.
I'm sure DJ Spoonie could do a remix for the Island Game at
there, Cardiff. Hang on. Obviously, this means nothing to anyone because this is a podcast, but Tim, can you see that?
Oh, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
Baptist Sarin, right?
Yeah.
You've got a Gaelic style.
Yeah. Pretty in-depth analysis, that, isn't it?
It really was. Another observation of this game was Nigel Owens. I do love the way he says ooze. Ooze.
Yeah.
How would you spell the way he's, when he's telling someone at the base of a ruck to use it, how would you spell the way he says it?
Don't ask me about spelling.
E-W-Z-E.
Oh, no, double O-Z-E.
Double O-Z-E. Yeah. Ooze.
Ooze.
Ooze. Ooze it. And also, Devon Toner, I just, again, we've talked about this before, but he just does not look like a rugby player.
No, but he plays like one.
He certainly does. And
yes.
I just, on Twitter during the game, just went, rugby players that don't look like rugby players, go. And I'll just rattle through a team that our listeners have come up with. So, in the front row, props were quite difficult. Although Craig Taylor said, Alan, the disgrace to props, Dell. Should be one.
Absolute hunk.
Yeah, Max Lahief as well is a disgrace to props. He's in unbelievable shape, but that's just not how props should look. Mm. Nopawi Waddy said Jamie George as hooker.
No, he's exactly what a hooker should look like, isn't he?
Yeah, and Jerry Donovan, maybe a very different tack, said Dmitry Zarzewski says he's not a French hooker, he's a Russian call girl.
He definitely has the hair of a Russian call girl.
Yeah. Second row, we've got Devon Toner, Leo Cullen. The aging plumber, says Chris Gamlin Andrews.
BFG.
BFG, definitely. Jeff Parling says Alexandra Smalley, because rugby players usually develop shoulders. Rob M suggested Lou De Jager. Yeah, he's far better than his body should let him be.
Yes.
And Luke Charteris looks like he should be in the NBA, says Alex Roberts. So
yes, I can see that.
Take your pick there. Back row, Adam Cowie said Thomas Waldrum. Fatty Matty just tweeted Toot Toot, obviously talking about Thomas the Tank as well. Tom Gorman says Nick Williams at number 8 for being rotund and looking like he's in his mid-50s.
No, I think Nick Williams looks exactly... I mean, he doesn't look like a high-level rugby player, but he certainly looks like a rugby player.
Yeah. No, he looks like a guy who's...
Level 8.
He's one of the guys that when I used to play for Newbury, you'd find someone like that playing for Oral. Oral still existed,
they'd have
just this Pacific Island.
They did have a
back
big,
row, massive Maff, back row.
They a guy yeah, they Maff, did. Maffy, I think he was.
Maffy, yes.
He was very much the Nick Williams mould.
Baptiste Sarang got a mention at 9 for Matthew Jones. 10, guess who people picked most as a rugby player that doesn't look like a rugby player?
Was it Camille Lopez?
he is a good one, actually. Yeah. Got to be a Goody.
Andy Goode got loads of mentions. Duncan Weir got a mention. Finn Russell with his wee arms, says Fiona Hunter. Stephen Larkham as well. Robbie Alexander said Johnny May has the physique of leftover spaghetti. Paul Simmons says Matthew Bastereau. I disagree that he doesn't look like an international rugby player. It's just that he looks like an international prop.
Not an outside centre.
Yeah. Peter the Speed Bump Horn. And Brian Gallagher said Gary Ringrose. I thought that was a bit harsh. Wing and fullback didn't have anyone mentioned, but loads of other people in other positions, so thank you for that. And if you've got any more suggestions, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter.
Very good.
Internationals done then?
I think so, unless there's anything else out of the Ireland France game.
No,
but on the France thing, interesting to hear that they're probably going to introduce central contracts and offer
is that right?
40 French players central contracts.
Really?
When did this happen?
This weekend, what's his face? Little Specs.
Laporte.
Said as much.
That's going to cost a bit of cash.
Cost a bit of cash. Game changer, though, isn't it?
Good God, how much will that cost? Ooh, let's find out.
40 times...
Well, you know, what's a French international? I mean, a big salary in the UK is, what, 350? That's a top-end salary. You've got to assume, what, 400 maybe for the French?
Yeah, say 400k to make the maths simple.
But maybe you would take a little bit less and they might up their match fees like England do. You take a little bit less money, but then you know you don't have to play every game.
Yeah,
in the
central
top
contract
14.
Wouldn't be 400k, would it? It'd be half of that and then the club pays the other half.
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends how they do it. But yeah.
But not having to play every week of that meat grinder.
Only 8 million.
Yeah. 200k, yeah.
Come on, Cornerstone. Give us some more money and we can...
Cornerstone, did you say?
Are we going to assemble a French squad?
Well, a seven squad, yeah.
Okay.
Can I mention, by the way, that in the advert, I was reading the Times on the plane, back because I was at the big game in Scotland yesterday.
I saw.
Obviously, wasn't I? I was at the big game in Scotland.
I've got complaints.
Oh. Huh?
I've got a complaint about you in particular, Tim.
Really?
Do you want to hear it?
Okay, yeah.
So this is the big game. You all know the one I'm talking about. Is it Cowdenbeath Aberdeen?
I was at the big game in Scotland. It was, not Murrayfield. It was Aberdeen v Ross County.
Yeah.
So, at Pittodrie. Sorry about that accent. That's terrible.
You said something like, the keeper scrambled for it, kept it out of the net, but it already crossed the whitewash. Now,
that's a rugby term,
yeah.
Isn't it?
I was sat with football fans, and they were like, "We have no idea what that is." I was like, "I know what it is. It's the line." Because I've watched football for 20 odd years, I've never heard that. So, maybe you haven't then.
That's because we just assume it's part of our language. Yeah. We just assume.
Sorry, sorry.
And then you referred to the corner, which resulted in the headed goal, as a headed ruck play, which is bizarre.
Yeah, I did. That's right.
And he's about to take the line out.
Yeah. And then for some reason...
He's bounced it forward!
For some reason...
Offside, surely he's off. He's in front of the kicker.
Yes, exactly. The kick chase was good, but they're in front. It's a penalty.
And for some reason, they weren't up for wedgies and... wedgies and downing pints after the game, the players.
Weird.
I know, weird. I was at the big game in Scotland. But
was that up in Aberdeen?
Aberdeen. Yeah, so anyway, I was reading the Times on the way back and there's an advert for Gillette and the players it features for Gillette are Gethin Jenkins and George North.
That's right, yeah, George North.
Now, if you want to take that as a metaphor, maybe you look at their faces and you go, oh, what a lovely clean shaven. But I presume the sort of the things Gillette want to highlight is precision. Mm. Razor sharp.
Yeah.
Gethin Jenkins not playing. George North completely out of touch. So yeah,
exactly. Which is why we use Phil for our Cornerstone adverts.
Yeah.
Which you can get where, Tim?
Cornerstone, the best razor, as voted for by GQ magazine. Far better than Gillette. Far cheaper as well if you come with us because you get a £10 discount on your first order. Loads of people have been getting in touch with us on Twitter and saying how delighted they are with not just their razors, very, very competitively priced and the best you can get, but also, isn't that the Gillette's strapline?
Yeah, it might be.
The best a man can get. Whatever. The best razors you can get, fact, are Cornerstone. And you not only get your brilliant razors, but you get your free... engraved aluminium shaft, engraved with your initials, with your first order, which you can get for just £4 because you listen to us. Exactly. If you go to cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, that's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
Egg10 at checkout.
Yeah.
I don't think we can top this podcast now. We've done Cornerstone. It's not going to get any better. We should just call it a day.
Yeah.
Well, there's not really much to cover because I've just looked up the European Rugby Nations Championship.
Week off, isn't it?
Week off, yeah, their rest week, and there's no games in the Six Nations next week, so I think that's a wrap.
Excellent. Right, well, go on, Tim.
Oh, I was just going to say,
finish it off. You're the pro here.
Hit subscribe, and the next episode and every future episode will be just delivered straight to you. You don't even have to think about it, which means when you wake up on Wednesday morning, there will be a perfect midweek domestic podcast size and shape thing waiting for you in your feed. There you go, nothing to worry about, but we'll have one of those then. Thank you for listening to this one at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, Egg Chasers Podcast on Instagram, Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast on Facebook. There's loads of information about our trip to Romania, which we've been talking about. Really excited about that, and we'll get more into that next week, I think. But yeah, we're done. Phil, good work.
Thank you, Tim.
Nice one, JB.
Thank you. And yeah. Facebook Live, you'll see us in about 5 minutes when we do the next installment, which is the midweek domestic.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Podcast,
which we do on Tuesday night.
Yes, Tuesday night.
But we're just doing a rehearsal now.
Exactly.
Yes.
Honest.